My Family Recipe is a new podcast from Food 52 and Heritage Radio Network, bringing you cherished heirloom recipes and the stories behind them. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome, everyone, to another beautiful episode of Cooking in Mexican from A to Z. I'm one of your hosts, Aaron Sanchez, alongside my beautiful mom,
Zarela Martinez.
Of course, this is brought to you on Heritage Radio Network, and we have the unbelievable pleasure of inviting somebody that I care deeply about. I consider my hermano, my compadre. He is someone that's brilliant. He is probably one of the smartest chefs I know, but also he has made California's home for many, many years. And the topic that we're going to be touching upon is going to be Cal-Mex, the influence of that California in the Mexican influence in California cuisine and what has become of that. But let me give a little bit of love about my boy, Neil. Of course, he's a chef and owner at Red Bird in L.A. He's a native Los Angelian. How do you say it, Neil?
Angelino.
Thank you. He's worked for very notable chefs, Wolfgang Puck, of course, Thomas Keller, David Berg. We can go down the line. He's had many restaurants, but one of my favorites where I first met Neil was at Grace. And I remember you made this beautiful scallop dish with this little corn hash that was just so dynamite. And I never forgot it after all those different years. And then, you've been on Top Chef Masters and all that good stuff. And now you're pioneering this beautiful space where you were so generous to open up for Aaron Sanchez Scholarship event, which I'm eternally grateful for. So I just want to welcome everyone, Chef Neil Frazier. So welcome, Papa.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Of course.
It's an honor to be with you guys.
Thank you. So Neil, talk to me about your earliest experiences with Mexican food growing up in California, and what were some of those vivid memories, and how did it influence your outlook on food in general?
Yeah, I think growing up in L.A., my parents honeymooned in Rosarito, Mexico, which obviously is not, the food belt of Mexico. But that was my kind of first experiences, was going to the Rosarito Beach Hotel where they were married or had their honeymoon. You know, eating the food of that city, which is a coastal city, a lot of seafood. But I think that I really started to understand Mexican food when I really started to understand more of the ingredients and how to kind of tie those ingredients into what I wanted to cook, because, I'm not a Mexican chef. I'm not, I do have a partners in a Mexican restaurant very recently, but I really love the story of all the ingredients that either were originated in Mexico or were cultivated in Mexico and kind of brought to, worldwide global dominance, like, corn, tomatoes, and chocolate. And kind of, as I, kind of grew up knowing the food and then grew up, obviously traveling through Mexico and some of the places maybe the road less traveled, most recently to me was, Mexico City, which is, I don't know why, a lot of Angelinos haven't been to Mexico City. I mean, I talked to one of my friends the other day, he's on the radio, he's, older than me. And I'm like, what's your favorite restaurant in Mexico City? He's like, I've never been, and I think that, Mexico kind of needs a new publicist. And I also think that the best parts of Mexico that I really love traveling and I think it has the best food are the places away from the coast, away from the gringos, where you get to kind of see the ingredients. And I think that, Mexico City is obviously the catcher of all those things because it's the biggest city, it has the biggest population. Just like Los Angeles, there's great, there's not just great Oaxacan food in LA, there's great food from lots of different places, just like there is in Mexico City.
Well, James Osland, who used to be editor of Sabor magazine, just published a fantastic book about Mexico City. It is gorgeous. It is so informative. It is just wonderful. And it's going to be a series of food, kind of like the old Life magazine, Time Life series of special gourmet books. But it's anybody who wants to know about Mexico City has to pick that book up.
Every time I go, I don't want to leave. You see so many just great people, and they're really just like you go to Rosarito Beach, the food is very, I'm sure there's some amazing restaurants in Rosarito I haven't been to, but when you go to Mexico City, you have some of the best Italian food you've ever had. You have great pizza. You have great, I don't know if you guys have been to Maximo's Bistro, the guy who was a chef owner, this guy Lalo, who was deported twice, flies business class to his restaurants in Europe and You know, it was really, you know, it has great Italian food on his menu. You know, I mean, I had, you know, pasta negra, you know, in his bar a couple of years ago. I'm like, what is that? He's like, that's pasta negra. I'm like, is that made in Mexico? No, he goes, no, it's Spanish, idiot. You know, it's like, but he's like celebrating the best ingredients on the planet. And I, you know, I have a lot of a love for that. I also have a lot of love for all the bugs that are used in Mexico. We actually, in our Dine LA menu, that's just starting on Friday of this week, we're going to do like a, you know, play on a churro with a chocolate sauce, and we're going to do cocoa nibs. And I found a local resource for Chicatana ants. So we're going to have like ants and chocolate and cocoa nibs and, you know, more or less churros, although it won't be an actual churro. But
well, you know, we just, in Oaxaca, we went to Alejandro Ruiz's restaurant, Casa Oaxaca. And he had this huge tostada with all different kinds of crispy insects, you know, the chicatanas, the grasshoppers, the gusanos. It was fantastic.
Yeah. We went to a restaurant in Puebla and it was the same. They actually had a special part of their menu. It was just all bugs. They had the Del Maguey worms. I mean, the Maguey worms were like, you know, the size of my pinky. They were a little hard to choke down, but they were delicious.
Mom, we had Dr. Bugs on, right, Mom?
Yeah. So the day that we went to Alejandro Ruiz's, we listened to this podcast that we did with Mark Moffat, who's called Dr. Bugs. It is the most hysterical podcast. I mean, I laughed more than I had through all COVID. It was like the first laugh. So when we went the other day to eat there, we came back to the place where we were staying, and we watched, we listened to the podcast.
Yeah.
It was wonderful. So I really recommend, it's called Eat Your Bugs. I really recommend it.
Eat Your Bugs, exactly. No, but I think one of the things I would love to bring up, because I think it's, let's be very honest about when you work in the restaurant industry, we have a lot of our Mexican familia and our team come from these places. And I've been to your restaurant and I've cooked in your kitchen, in your kitchens, chef. And I understand that, you know, you're probably very much more skewed to the Mexican, you know, vernacular in your kitchens. Has some of the cooks and some of your chefs that work with you giving you ideas as how you want to form some items on your menu?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, we're trying to do elevated food. So, the food we do is, you know, a lot of it, if it's Mexican influence, it's elevated. But we had one of my sous chefs is, you know, unfortunately no longer working with us. And, you know, I love chilaquiles with mole. And we had, you know, we had duck breast on the menu. We didn't have any kind of use for our legs. So we did a chilaquiles with duck confit with mole and a poached egg. And, you know, we'll do 50 people for brunch, you know, on a slow day, and we'll sell 40 orders of chilaquiles. I mean, it's really good. And it's got a little like a pico de gallo on the top and a little bit of avocado crema on the bottom with a poached egg on top. And but again, like, you know, the first time I ever had pozole,
you lost me with
was made by yeah, well, yes, fried egg, but sunny side, not scrambled egg. But I was up in Central California with my buddy who unfortunately passed away, Jim Clendenin, and he famously made lunch, not every day, but he would make lunch 100 days a year for his staff. And you know, some of his people were Latinos. I don't know where he learned how to make pozole, but first time I ever had pozole was in his winery, and I ate this. I'm like, I've heard of pozole. It's like menudo. Like, bad menudo tastes terrible. Good menudo tastes amazing. The same with pozole. Like, if you're using table scraps and dishwater to make it, it's different than, you know, making chicken stock with feed, and it has lots of collagen. I had it, and then, you know, I had pozole from time to time on my menu, and people were like, what area of Mexico is this pozole inference from? I'm like, downtown Los Angeles, right here.
Perfect.
Because every time you go and you're like, you know, you go to, you know, Zarella and you say, well, this is my dish that I, you know, got from Zacateca. And she's like, BS, this is not what I had there. You have to make it your own to a certain point. And I always find that,
exactly,
you know, with any sort of indigenous food, like if we have a Nigerian wedding, I'm cooking Nigerian food, and I fly to Nigeria and I work with the best Nigerian chef for 10 years, and I come back and I make it for Nigerian grandma, she's like, this food sucks. Because it's a comparison to like what you had back home. And I think that with Mexican food, you know, my kind of nod to that, or my, you know, respect for that, is making it my own. Like, I'm never going to be able to replicate what I can have somewhere else. Nor do I want to. It's like, I want to make it my own. But, you know, Mexico is really, you know, it's the Bible Belt of, you know, I'm like, where would Italians be without Mexico? They'd be cooking like fish without salt, you know.
Explain about your style, Mom, too.
Yeah, and where would Italian restaurants in New York be without Mexican chefs? I mean, practically all the Italian restaurants here have Mexican chefs. Yeah. Well, my style is more contemporary. It's like how they described it was a contemporary interpretation of fine food, of food served in fine homes. It's, you know, I went to finishing school where I learned a lot of wonderful dishes that sort of the upper crust people had. They were actually really down home dishes, you know, like a cornbread made with rice flour and, you know, cannelloni made with spinach. And it was just like an amazing, amazing education. And that's the kind of food that I served at the restaurant. But it was actually, they used to call it gourmet. It wasn't gourmet. What it was a food of the fiestas, you know, of the different towns. That's what I did. I did all the specialties of little towns, that food that they serve at the fiestas.
We did a bike ride with some of my crazy friends, and we rode our bikes from Mexico City to San Cristobal about 4 years ago. You know, when you think about Oaxaca, I don't know, it's like anything. Like, you think about Oaxaca, you're like, yeah, it's kind of in the mountains, and there's, you know, native-looking people that live there, and you're like, oh, Oaxaca is like kind of like California, right? Some of it's on the, you know, some of it's on the coast, some of it's very high altitude. We were riding our bikes at 9,000 feet on paved roads, and we pulled into this one town, which they call I forget the name of the town, but it's like where they have the psilocybin mushrooms, which they didn't have any, unfortunately. They had one chicken in the whole town. And there were 10 of us riding bikes, and they're like, sorry, we just have one chicken. We're like, okay. And they made us tacos. I mean, they made us, you know, the most, I mean, we've been riding our bikes for 4 hours so that we would have eaten, you know, the chicken poo, and it would have tasted good.
Yeah.
But they made us tacos with this one chicken. They fed 10 of us out of one chicken. We were, you know, full and ready to, you know, finish our ride.
Did you notice that, what makes that place fascinating besides the mushrooms, is that they have a whistle language. Because you know how the mountains were so high around and the villages in the middle, like in a canyon? Well, they whistled across the mountain things. And in those, on the bottom of those mountains are this deep water, underwater caves that go down to like 1,000 meters, and spelunkers come from all over the world to go into. It's a fascinating place.
Yeah. It's like San Cristobal de las Casas. You kind of feel like you're in San Miguel de Allende, you know, 40 years ago. It's like, you know, it has that kind of vibe. It's at high altitude. It's just so interesting when you know, you think about Mexico, like, you know, being in Angelino, like you think about Mexico, you drive to Tijuana, you're like, there's Mexico. It's all like Tijuana.
Yeah.
And then you go to, you know, we went to Valle de Guadalupe a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, exactly.
And I was just blown away. I mean, the wines were okay, good, decent. But the food and the culture and the people doing stuff down there, I mean, you know, Javier Plasencia is just killing it. And I mean, the food is just really world class.
And Benito does a great job. And there's another chef that we should mention named Antonio de Livier, who has a beautiful little restaurant called El Humador. And it's right in Rosarito, and he's cooking everything open flame. Fantastic chefs. Happy that we're giving some love to Baja, because you're right. Because we are talking about Calmex, right? So Baja California. So all this is relative, and I think pertinent to what we're talking about.
Well, we had Coleman Andrews on, and he was talking about Baja California. And did you have the borrego frito? You know, the roasted lamb that they fry until it's crisp afterwards.
No, I've had stuff like that in Mexico City, but not in Baja. No. But one of my buddies, I went to CIA, and I went with this guy, Dan Molnar, who grew up, I met him at Valley College.
But Neil, real quick, who was your roommate?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Johnny Vesh. He actually wasn't my roommate.
But he was in the same area, but whatever.
He was in my
class, he likes
class,
to
yeah.
tell the story. Go ahead.
We shared, we had the same soap on a rope. We used to share the same soap.
I love it. Go ahead.
But my buddy Dan, who went to culinary school with me, and he's been a ski bum his whole life, and he lives in Mammoth. But for the last 4 years, he has three kids. He lives in, they have a van, like a custom van, and they drive it down to Baja, 10 hours down the coast. They on a dirt road, 3.5 hours. He goes there for a month. This year he wants to go without going to land. So they, you know, he's bringing enough water and food with his three kids. The oldest is 7, and he's living on the beach with Mexican fishermen, trading fish, just living the simple lifestyle. And I'm like, he did this during COVID. You know, I'm here like, you know, triaging like, you know, World War III, trying to keep my business in line. And my friend Dan is eating mussels on the beach in Mexico.
Like, you asshole. I'm just like,
what's fucking wrong with me? Exactly. What am I doing? It's like not a big enough rock to hit against my head. And this guy's living on the beach with his three kids. They all speak Spanish.
Well, you know, when Aaron was at Outward Bound for Kids at Risk, I took Rodrigo and a young boyfriend I had on this two skiffs with two biologists, you know, a biologist couple. And we went from one uninhabited island to the other, and we caught our fish, and I am making couscous and, you know, among the vinagrones and all that. But we stopped at this place where they had this cut in the sand, like at the sandbar. And there were all this mollusks that had become extinct. You went all the way down. It was so impactful. It was just amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, Mexico is awesome. I love it.
And I just think it's interesting to mention that Chef Neil is one of these gentlemen that loves the outdoors, loves that sort of, not, I don't want to say alternative lifestyle, but it's, you know, he goes to Burning Man, you know what I'm saying? And you've invited me a couple times, and I'm sorry I haven't been, but it's like, I'll get there, baby. But the idea is like being able to think instead of this like sort of compartmentalized chef, this is what we do. So many different things influence us, whether it's Mexico, whether it's our travels. And I think it's very important to mention.
Yeah. Yeah, it's inspiring. I mean, you know, it's, even if I don't like find a recipe, I find an ingredient or I bugs to me, I've been saying this for years. I think bugs are kind of the future of food. You know, it's like, you know, you can raise enough protein off grasshoppers and with 1/100 of the amount of water than you can on beef, you know, and they grow very easily. They're relatively nutritious. You can grow them and eat them. You don't have to refrigerate them. You can, you can kill them and eat them. Like it's, you know, how hard is it to carry around a bag of grasshoppers? It's like, carry around a cow is different, you know? And I think that there's a lot to be said about all these, you know, it's like, I always think about that, you know, in all different kinds of food, like what we would eat, like if there was a larva that infected the rice and we throw the rice out, why would we not cook those things together, you know, and have something more nutritious?
You know, that Dr. Bugs said that they're 94% protein bugs. So, and then I don't gave the sad news to a lot of vegans that a lot of the flowers that they buy has 40% insect parts.
Yes, it does. It does. You know, there's a lot of protein that comes from the vegan stuff from bugs, but it's okay. I mean, that's a gray area. You know what I'm saying? If you will, you know.
Well, now they're rationed now. You know, the maguey worms are rationed now in Oaxaca.
Yeah.
Good food is worth 1,000 words. This is Aarti Menon, and I'm delighted to share a new podcast with you, My Family Recipe, from Food 52 and Heritage Radio Network. Adapted from Food 52's much-loved column of the same name, the My Family Recipe podcast will bring its pages to life. Each episode of My Family Recipe brings you a cherished heirloom recipe and the story behind it, from voices across the world of food.
We'd open these tubs of dough and they would exhaust these incredible yeasty fumes and it just smelled like nothing else. It was so intoxicating.
I'll interview writers and chefs, parents and children about what's passed down along with the foods that we know and love.
Chinese people aren't like born with a download on how to like velvet chicken. You know, like that's not something that just like comes to you.
Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
So let's talk a little bit about, okay, so I know that you've been a champion for Mexican ingredients forever, Neil, in your cuisine. I remember you were one of the first gringo chefs using huilacoche, like back in the day. Now, how challenging was it for you to procure those ingredients? You know, did you have a guy that would bring them up, or did you have to go to mail order sources, or what? How was that for you earlier in your career?
I think originally, you know, Frank Chino was probably cultivating or allowing the corn to, you know, have that stuff. I mean, I think, you know, originally just like any chef, you want to cook with, you know, caviar and foie gras. And huilacoche was kind of like, you know, the Mexican truffle or the corn truffle. And I think I was kind of drawn towards it because it was a luxury ingredient. But I think along the way, like, you know, I'd much rather have, you know, escamoles in my kitchen, which are very hard to find in Los Angeles, than I would something that's a, you know, something that's more of a peasanty dish. You know, although the bugs in Mexico, they're not cheap. Like if you go to a market in, you know, San Cristobal de las Casas and you get, you know, the grasshoppers with chili and lime, you know, they're like $5 for like a bag, like, you know, like a small popcorn bag. But I like those kind of ingredients, but I think that's huilacoche was that first thing. And I don't necessarily use a lot of it and I don't necessarily love the flavor profile, but I think just like anything else, I probably not have gotten the best huilacoche because just like truffles, I mean, the truffles from Oregon, you know, taste like doo-doo and the truffles from Australia, which are now cultivated, are some of the best truffles in the world. And I'm sure huilacoche is in that same genre.
I mean, they're starting to make sake in Oregon, buddy. You know what I'm saying? Or they've been making, I mean, like, so just to give you an
idea. They're making sake in L.A. Sake in L.A.
I mean, it just, this is incredible. The world of food in our industry has opened up and everyone's interpreting it the way they want. And I think it's exciting. I think the idea of the purist, of what a purist means is being put on its head. I think all of us need to be a little bit more open-minded when it comes to that. You know what I'm saying? Because the best way you can honor our culture is by embracing it. Very much like you've done, Neil. Rick Bayless, who we had on our show. The best way you can do it is to cook our food and do it justice. Right, Mom?
Exactly.
Don't you think? It's the best way of saying that.
Can I take a little step back and define with La Coche? With La Coche becomes this, the corn kernels become invaded by this spore, and they become like a mushroom. It's a corn mushroom. It become all black, and you know this. The Burns brothers in Florida developed this technique of injecting every ear of corn with the spores, and they always have with La Coche. You know, not always, because they become so popular that it's hard to get, you know, but they sell it frozen and it's really good. And what I do, because I know what you're saying about the flavor profile, but what I do in most of my parties is that I make a soup, like a cream soup with poblano and epazote and with La Coche, puree it and serve it in demitasse, you know, when people come into a party and that's the first flavor that they have. And it's like a great palate opener.
And here's one thing I've heard about the corn, by the way, and of course my mom's gonna probably bust my huevos about this, but I talked to a guy in Tlaxcala, where they call it La Cuna, or the sort of birthplace of corn and tortillas, that every little silky strand that you see on corn represents one kernel.
No, it wasn't that Zach told us that.
No, he didn't tell me that. I think he might. No. I saw when I someone told me that. So Neil, every little silky strand represents one kernel on a cob.
It's funny. We were growing corn in our garden last year. It was not very good, you know, edible wise. But my chef cuisine, Jason, he goes, you know what corn is? I'm like, no, what is it? He goes, it's rice. It's basically genetically modified or whatever, cross pollinated rice. And I pulled the things open. You can actually see the silk coming out of the top of the corn. And then you look at it, you're like, oh, you could actually see it because of the way our corn was, you know, was growing. And also it was too dry. But it looked, you know, you could see each one was going to one kernel. It was fascinating, you know.
Well, you know, Oaxaca has become huge. Yesterday was El Día del Maíz. And our friends are working with teocintle, which is the original, you know, the plant that they use to develop corn in, you know, pre-Hispanic people. And it's hard as a rock. They're like little rocks, practically. And they're working with it. And they had their first harvest of this. And in fact, this wonderful documentary that, that they put together about, because they started like all this corn warehouses, I guess. Every little village has its own corn and seed banks. And in case somebody goes away to live in the United States for a while, they leave their seeds in the bank, and then they come back and they can have the same corn that, that they had before, you know, because everybody's very proud.
That's cool.
It's really, really cool. So this documentary of theirs is gonna be in a festival in L.A. You know, so,
That's cool.
Yeah,
and it, you know the name of it, Mom. So yeah, Neil and all of us gonna.
Yeah, I'll look it up right now.
Yeah, you know, it's like almost like, you know, when you think about you know, Anson Mills, you know, which is a company in South Carolina, and they've been kind of, you know, growing these heritage things, and you know, I always thought like Carolina Gold Rice was from Carolinas. It's all, you know, came from Africa. It's like, you know, it's like all the corn didn't, there's no native corn that was growing in the United States. I mean, obviously these things were brought, you know, to, you know, thousands of miles, thousands of years ago. You know, it's the same with chocolate. I was looking that up, you know, the where chocolate was originally from. I always thought it was from Mexico. It's actually not, it's from South America, and they still have wild chocolate that grows in the rainforest, but it was originally brought to Mexico, and then it was cultivated, and then obviously, you know, they I forget the name of the drink, but it was like the, you know, before they beheaded all their enemies, they would drink the chocolate. You know, the Aztecs would drink the chocolate alcohol thing, and then behead everybody.
The name of the documentary is Los Guardianes del Maíz, the keepers of the corn.
Nice.
Keepers, guardians, of the corn. But I think it's interesting to mention, though, that right now we're living in a place where information is so available as far as the artisanal ingredients, right, that make things so special. And I think everyone needs to be informed. You're listening to this podcast. We're going to put tons of links up for people to go and seek out these ingredients and seek out Chef Neil and engage him. Make sure that you have questions. Do it, or myself or my mom. We're here for you guys as that resource. I think it's important to mention.
I think there's also another great couple guys. They're younger, in their 20s, and they were kind of burned out on buying, you know, crappy tortillas. So they started their own tortilla factory in L.A. It's called Kernel of Truth. And they, you know, they're buying organic corn. They're doing all their nixtamalization in-house. It's, I think their plant is in East LA. And they're, you know, they're starting, you know, it's just like, you know, a guy like Ray Garcia, he'll go to a farmer in Mexico, but, you know, they're getting stuff that's more locally grown and locally sourced, but they're doing it, you know, the way they've been making tortillas for, you know, thousands of years. They're doing it, you know, the OG way, which, you know, Americans, we've done a really good job of, I mean, I guess in Mexico too, but we've done a really good job of taking something that's really great and making it terrible by mass producing it by, you know, it's like Bibo as an example in Mexico or whatever, you know.
I'm sure Bimbo started as a great bakery at one point. Right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It was, but now it's like an awesome.
Yeah, it's like Wonder Bread, you know, it's like, but I'm just saying, like, but the you know, the original, that I'm sure the original white bread that they you know, polished the wheat so it was white, so it was beautiful and amazing.
Yeah.
That's, you know, I'm saying it's nice to see like tortillas, which you can buy probably any supermarket almost on the planet. You know, people are going back to like the way it was made a long time ago. You know,
it's, well, you know, we had this this guy who was founded an organization for the preservation of the corn tortilla, because the consumption in Mexico has gone down to 40%. But corn in the United States, because of all the fritos and the Doritos and, you know, the tostadas and all that kind of stuff, has grown like to about 80% consumption now in the United States. And there's a guy, a young kid here that who did our first podcast, actually, Zach Wangerman, who is actually Oaxacan. He has a tortilleria all done with native corn. And yeah, and it's called Sobre Masa, which is a great play on the term.
And now they're making whiskey. Absolon is one of the ones that's doing it right now. Corn, artisanal corn whiskey in Mexico, bro. So there's a lot of cool things happening. There's a gentleman, there's a couple brothers that are making clothing, leather clothing with the byproducts of maguey.
Of the nopales,
yeah, but also the magueyes too, mom. And the nopal, and they're making clothing out of it. Isn't that neat? So there's a lot going on right now, and I think having you here, Neil, is a beautiful sort of beacon and a voice for that wonderful intersection between Mexico and California, which I think is sort of the voice for a lot of Mexican cuisine in our country. So that's why we're doing this right now.
Yeah. We were used to be part of Mexico, you know, and I think a lot of people in California wish that we still were. You know, I think
tell the story, mommy. Tell the story.
When I used to do a lot of public speaking, I used to say, United States took California, New Mexico, Nevada, Texas from Mexico, and the Mexicans have quietly reclaimed it.
Yeah, not so, I mean, not so quietly in LA. I mean, you know, LA is, you know, it's it becomes more and more Latino. And I got to say, it's like, you know, I know I'm a semi-old, you know, aged white guy, but you know, the politics of a state and a city should be representational of the people that live there. And you know, there's a huge influence. I mean, you know, a lot of the politicians that I'm, you know, personally friends with, you know, Monica Rodriguez, you know, she's third generation, you know, Californian, but you know, definitely there's a lot of good stuff in, you know, Mexican heritage happy in LA. And you know, it's kind of the, you know, the women that are kind of leading it, which I, you know, I'm very proud to do. We do an event with her. It's called Politics and Pozole. We've been doing it for the last 7 years, and it's basically a breakfast with all the kind of the power leaders of the Latino politics in the state of California. And, you know, it's nice to kind of be part of that, you know, the message. And, you know, when Amy and I started Redbird, you know, it was kind of important to us to become part of the fabric of Los Angeles. We're a block from City Hall. We're a catty corner from the LAPD headquarters, which is also headquarters for the FBI in downtown LA. And those people come to our restaurant, you know, and I like, you know, that we can be more than just a restaurant. We can be obviously a place where people celebrate and people have weddings and people have birthday parties. But, you know, also to go to the bar, and it's like, you know, the head of, you know, PR for LAPD is sitting at the bar, and I can, you know, chat with them about what's going on in Los Angeles.
At times you need somebody that's not necessarily from our culture to speak up.
Absolutely.
And I think that, and I think this is what grabs people's attention, you know? And I think it's so special what your mission, yeah. Neil, I hope we're in a good place right now. We're representing all of our Mexican and our Latino family out there. And I think you have done so much to bring some light to that.
Well, you know, so. I remember Jeffrey Pilcher, who is the guy who wrote Que Viva Los Tamales, and he wrote Planet Taco. He's a really great food historian dedicated to Mexican food. And when I first opened the restaurant, he came in with this paper he had done comparing the food of Diana Kennedy, Rick Bayless, Patricia Quintana, Susana Palazuelos, and my food. And what he discovered is that Rick and Diana, the güeros, were doing focusing more on traditional food and trying to preserve that, while us Mexicans were playing more with the food because it was sort of something that we grew up with, you know, and it was just, we were not into preserving.
And you had the right to, Mom. Mm-hmm. That's the difference, you know?
Exactly.
But also, you have a history of cuisine. You know, I don't. You know, I'm a gringo. My dad was English, you know. When he grew up, I mean, you know, they were eating their, you know, their left foot. That was the tastiest thing in the pantry. You know, the food of England, I mean, it's just kind of grown up. And my mom was born in Michigan, and she went to high school in Oklahoma, you know, two places with not great cuisine. And they moved to California, you know, again, like, you know, we're still trying to figure out our heritage of food. But, you know, what really, just like any city, and, you know, I always say, like, you know, there's great fine dining restaurants in Los Angeles, but there's really great ethnic restaurants in Los Angeles. And it's, you know, not just Mexican food. I mean, there's great Korean food. There's great Chinese food. And there's a Michelin one-star Chinese restaurant in Temple City. And people are like, where's Temple City? It's like, it's just down the street, you know. And it's great to just see. I mean, you know, maybe Ray Garcia is the only one that's kind of trying to push it. I mean, obviously, Enrique Alvera, who's, you know, a carpetbagger to LA. But, you know, still, like, you know, his restaurants are solid. You know, I mean, I think he's doing a good job. I think that, you know, Detroit, his little taco place in the alley is good. We've been to Damian a couple times. And, you know, the thing about LA and fine dining Mexican food is that, you know, LA is like, you know, kind of like the taco is kind of the gateway drug or the quesadilla. You know, it's it's taken longer for fancier Mexican food to kind of take on, because I think it's to, you know, the people in LA, they kind of associate with one sort of thing. So it's nice to have people, you know, Mexicans from different places moving to LA and opening, you know, more fine dining restaurants. I mean, Amy and I went and had tacos and margaritas at Detroit the other day. It was like $75. And I was like, I had like three tacos and, you know, four margaritas, three margaritas. I don't know.
So
yeah, $12 chef, tacos.
Just to kind of put a little ribbon on this and a little button, how can people get to you and continue to have this conversation? Because this is like what we like to do as good Mexicans, shamelessly plug. All right. So this is your opportunity. All right. So how can people get engaged with you?
I'm easy to find. I'm relatively, I'm not, you know, I don't post a lot on Instagram or Facebook, but you can message me there. You can go to our website. I'm sure my email is on our website, redbird.la, viviana.com. You can call the restaurant. You can call Aaron's cell phone and he can text me.
And also, but he's mentioning Amy because we have two Amys. Amy Curry is our fantastic producer who's so brilliant, but he also has a very brilliant Amy who's his better half. And
she's my better half. She's my, not only my wife, but also the person who's the director of operations for all of our businesses and really the guiding light of, you know, basically what happens, everything except for culinarily. And even with her, you know, there's always some influence, but she's the one who kind of ties everything together.
So what are your causes?
My causes? I mean, right now, my biggest cause is mental health, you know.
Yeah, like all of us.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't want to go into it on the radio, but it's been it's been hard.
Livelihood.
But I think that you know, my causes are, you know, going to be for the next couple of years, you know, dealing with mental health and really trying to get people to open their mouths about, you know, what's going on inside of them. And you know, we're always kind of trying to be, you know, stewards to Los Angeles. I sit on the board for LA's Best, which is an after school program, which does after school programs for 25,000 kids in the city of LA, all schools that are, you know, in bad neighborhoods with bad funds. I've been on the board for LA's Best for about 7 years. We do a lot of work with CCAP, which I really love. And I've got one kid who's I call him the prodigal son to his face now. But he got a full scholarship. He'd never been on an airplane before. He worked at Redbird. He got a full scholarship to CIA, got a full scholarship to Drexel University. He wanted his MBA, so he's actually, funny enough, enlisting in the military. He's on active reserve right now. He's gonna join the military as an officer. He's gonna get the GI Bill and he's gonna get his MBA at USC. And then hopefully, if I'm lucky, he's gonna offer me a job. And exactly. Jose Gordillo, who you probably met around, who's a super, super great guy. And, you know, just trying to be a good steward for LA. And you know, I for a long time, you know, I wore LA on my sleeve, you know, because everybody hated LA. You went to New York, LA sucks. You went to San Francisco, LA sucks. And, you know, now I don't have to say that anymore. Now everybody's like, LA is great. And people understand that. But, you know, I've been a big, you know, I had a kid very young. I have a 31-year-old daughter who's getting married Thanksgiving weekend. And I wanted to be part of her life. So I, you know, stayed close to home. And my mom still lives in the same house I was born into. So, you know, the blood runs blue. The Dodger blood runs blue through my veins. And I always try to be as supportive as I can of my home. I live as far away from home as I've ever lived. And I live 11 miles away from, you know, where I was born and raised. So not very far.
Well, it's a pleasure for me to meet you, Neil.
Likewise.
I don't talk a lot about you.
He talks about you too. He's scared of you.
I'm scary. He used to always say to me, Mom, you're like so a cervic. And I said, it's okay. I don't care. People exactly. are afraid of you. That's fine. Don't worry.
And then we would go to dinner when we were young, and something went wrong. She goes, by the way, I have a restaurant, and she would say that, and we would go running to the bathroom because we were like so embarrassed because she would like let him know what time it was. You know what I mean? But
I particularly hated overpouring.
Sack of wine. I know, mom. But I hope, mom, that you understand the magic of this man. I've been to his home. I know his family well. He's one of the smartest, talented people I know. And well, I really consider him somebody I care about.
Thank you.
You know, he's brilliant.
Likewise.
He's just a beautiful human.
Thank you.
And thanks for spending this time with us.
Thanks for having me. It's my honor and pleasure. And if you want to have me back, I'd love to come back whenever that makes sense.
Awesome.
Great. Thank you so much.
We'll do a Burning Man episode. Yeah, talk about the foods at Burning Man. What do people do when they're inebriated on many different psychedelics?
They exactly. Eat a lot of dust.
That would be a brilliant topic. Let's get on that.
Yeah. All
right.
Sounds good.
Everyone, just to recap, you know, we've been talking a little bit about Calmex, the influence, and we've had a wonderful guest here, of course, my compadre, mi hermano, and Neil Frazier. Chef at Redbird in Los Angeles, a fantastic restaurant. And of course, this episode on cooking from A to Z with my beautiful mom, Sarala Martinez, myself, Aaron Sanchez, is on Heritage Radio Network. Please continue to find more information about it and engage us. There's a lot of information out there. Please reach out to our wonderful guest and my mom. So, mami.
Hasta luego.
Hasta luego.
Hasta luego.
Muchas gracias.
Thank you.
Cooking in Mexican from A to Z is powered by Simple Cast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, and more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without your support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like. Tell your friends and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening. Entrañas.